Hello and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm Ann Gordon here with my friend and chavrutah Dana Azban. Our daf of the day, Masechet Nazir, daf Nun Hey, page 55. So following on the heels of this debate over whether the land itself is what renders a person impure or whether it's the air in the non-Israel lands that make someone impure, the Gemara here, it's given all through Amud Aleph, it goes through this whole debate, and then it concludes, Ela dekulei alma mishum avira. It says everybody agrees that the impurity about the land of the other nations, right, meaning outside of the land of Israel, is really about the air. Umar savar kevan delo shchicha lo gazri be'rabanan. And one sage, and the commentators point out, or we could look it up, you know, you can suss it out, it says, Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Yehuda says that since it's not common for somebody to move around in, like if you were enclosed in a place, so then, therefore, lo gazru be'rabanan, the sages did not decree impurity if you were like stuck in one particular place. Again, following on the previous discussion, Omar Savar af al gav zelo shchicha gazru be'rabanan. And another sage, maybe Rabbi Huda Hanasi, who's not a minor character here, it's interesting that he isn't named explicitly by the Gemara, says that even though it wasn't common, the sages did decree impurity for somebody who would be like stuck in a narrow space, right? The previous discussion is talking about, and it's going to come up again, you know, the distinction of a tent or a box or different kinds of I want to say constricting elements that would keep a person within a certain set place within the land. The Hatanya, so the Gemara goes on to say that, and it teaches it, it's a breiter, it's really, it's a tosefta in Ohalot, Hanichnas la'eretz amim, bashida, teva, umigdal, tahor. So we have this tosefta that teaches that same opinion that was Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Yehuda's, namely that if you enter the land of the amim, the non-Jewish lands, non-Israel lands, and you come in a like a, I don't know, a, it says it translates it to be a chest. But I think of it as like, you know, some kind of like a trunk, right? Like some kind of, it's a piece of furniture, basically, or in a box or in a cabinet. So according to this, right, Tosefta Tahor, that person would be impure. Would be pure. Oh my goodness, I'm sorry. Bakaron o basvina o baiskaria tame. However, if you came to that same land via a wagon or a boat or a raft, then the person would be impure. And the difference is, according to commentaries, is that those latter things, the wagon and the boat and so on, are considered vessels that, you know, like, not like a kli kind of vessel per se, but their transportation. That's how people travel from one land to the next, so that you've done your traversing of the boundary and you end up getting impure. It is interesting that the closed nature of the shida or the box or the cabinet doesn't seem to be the primary distinction here. However, we have another explanation. So this potentially does connect to the closed nature of it, right? We have this another way of looking at it, that as much as the ritual impurity of the land is, you know, the question of whether it's with the earth or if it's in the air, so then perhaps the issue is whether if you're in that box or whatever it is, right, could you take your head out from within the closed place and leave the majority of your body in that box, let's say, and then, right, and so then that's the question. Shema yotzi rosho v'rubo l'sham, right, so you take your head out, but still the majority of you and the majority of your body would be out of the box, and then wouldn't you become impure? So, let me take a step back, right? If I say that I'm surprised that the initial commentaries are not saying that the distinction between the two categories of transportation materials, either regular transportation versus unusual transportation, and that's going to be the distinction for why one would be pure or impure, that the unusual transportation doesn't make you impure. And my question is, well, but don't we have a closedness to the unusual kinds of things? So the second understanding says, well, yes, part of the question is, could you get yourself out of the box or whatever, and most of your body would be out there in the air of the impure land, and then perhaps that would be the reason that you would then become impure. of a hat tanya, and we have another breita, Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, also in the name of this same, you know, rabbi, who says, "Hanichnas le'eretz ha'amim b'shida teva u'migdal tahor ad sheyotzi l'sham rosho arubo." And it says here it explicitly, right, that his opinion was literally that if you travel into these non-land of Israel lands, you remain pure as long as you are still in your, you know, the chest or the box or the cabinet. But the moment you bring your head or the majority of your body outside of the box, meaning into the land, into the air, rather, of the land of the nation of these other peoples, then you would also be, that would make you impure. As compared to, would say that he would be impure just because of the fact that he might come out, not that he has to come out first already.
I mean, it's a really kind of theoretical thing that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi is worried about. Like, I don't know. Wouldn't a person know if, like, they stuck their head or their hand out? I didn't quite understand why he wanted to be so stringent. Or was it a way of just ensuring people really ended up being careful that they did not make themselves tamei in any way?
I find it a little bit to be, I think the debate about it, I think the suggestion that a person could remain pure under these terms would be really strange. Meaning, who's going to travel in the box out to the nation's land, right? Meaning, they're traveling for, what, days, and they're going to stay in a box all that time? They're never going to come out? So, you know, it's reminiscent, let's say, of the Sefer Bereishit, the book of Genesis, where, you know, the Midrashim that say that Sarah was in a box. Right. And that's how they traveled there. And she departed, you know, with Abraham, but she was in a box. So she wasn't observed right away. And that, okay. But eventually she comes out, right? Like, meaning, I don't really get this. Because, so you're going to be pure in a theoretical sense. And then the moment you start walking around, you're impure anyway. So I feel like Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi says you're impure anyway. It might not be necessary, but it seems just more practical.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. And I guess, like, maybe there was an actual practical piece to it that we just don't understand because we don't exactly travel that way. Okay, I'm going to move on. And, you know, now that they wrap that discussion up about the Eretz Amim, we go back to the Mishnah where it says, U'matzchil Moneh. So remember, the big chiddush of that Mishnah that we read was that it listed a set of types of ways that a nezer could become tamei, where the term is interrupted, but as soon as he finishes the purification process, he goes back to counting the days of his nezirut, as opposed to the other examples that we had been dealing with previously, where it actually, like, uproots his nezirut, right? He loses out on his nezirut and has to start his count all over again. So on this list was if you were a mitzora, right? In other words, you had, you know, tzarat, or again, the bad English translation of that is leprosy. This doesn't count towards your nazir term, right? But you count as soon as you're done purifying yourself. So I'm a Rav Chisa. So Rav Chisa makes the following comment about this. Lo shanu ela b'nizirut mu'etet. So they didn't teach this in this Mishnah, right, when it came to a short-term nizirut. Aval b'nizirut merubah, but for a long nizirut, misalek nami salkinan le. The days, right, of this sarat, right, that you have to count, are also counted towards his term. So in other words, what Rav Chisda here is saying is the following, is that when we talk about a nazir mu'etet, that's when we talk about, like, just having, like, that standard 30-day term. And so what Rav Chisda is basically saying is that this Mishnah that is not doesn't apply to all types of nazirs. So if the time between the tzarat, and remember with the tzarat, you also have to shave yourself, okay? So that's what the issue is here. So remember, you also need to have a full 30 days of hair worth of growing. So the Mishnah, when it's talking about, you know, that this is for the standard, 30-day, what Rav Chisda is basically saying is that if you are a mitzora and you basically have to shave your entire body, remember they shaved everything, and you do that at the beginning of the 7 days, then when they become tahor, right? He doesn't have any hair left. But for a nazir to do that head shaving at the end, he has to have at least 30 days of growth of hair, right? So therefore, if a nazir has sarat during his term, right, during his, he can't ever do that head shaving earlier than 7 days after he did the final mitzora shave, right? So basically what this saying is that, so if a nazir just says, okay, I'm just going to be a nazir for 30 days, right? Let's say he becomes, he comes down with sarat, or, you know, on day, you know, let's say on day 10. And so therefore, you know, he becomes cured, you know, and then he becomes cured of his symptoms later on. And then he starts the 7 day, you know, purification process, right? If it doesn't end up, you know, if he becomes, let's say his symptoms go away in 2 days on day 12, and then he waits 7 days and he gets to 19, and then he shaves, when he gets then to like day 30, he doesn't actually have the 30 days of Nazirut hair that he needs, you know, the 30 days of growth that he needs to have. So therefore, this example of saying, you know, in terms of a 30-day Nazirut, that the days of Tzarat can't be counted towards his term, it doesn't really logically make sense. And so that's what Rav Chista is basically talking about. Like, it's not an issue of the counting. It's an issue of having the 30 days of hair growth that you need to have. So this is challenged, right? Meitav Rav Sharbia. So Rav Sharbia challenges this and basically quotes, you know, quoting our Mishnah. But he says, wait, the Mishnah says you count immediately and you don't disregard the previous days. But my, right, what would the Mishnah be referring to? Ilmalei b'nizirut mu'etet. If you say it's a case of short-term nizirut, meaning that standard 30 days, right? And then the ruling is that he doesn't, you know, forfeit, he doesn't lose out on the days and the preceding days before. Kavi gidl sayar, right? Because he needs 30 days of hair growth in order to be able to shave for his nizirut itself. So in other words, if a person accepts upon themselves just the standard 30 days of nizirut, okay? And then basically, anytime that he would get sarat, it basically is sort of like it's disregarded because he needs the full 30 days after he becomes pure from being sarat in order to grow enough hair to shave for the nazirut. So then how does the Mishnah say that the days do actually count? So what this would mean is that following his sarat, he actually could do less than 30 days because there's no way for him to get to the 30 days. So what Rav Sharvia is saying is like, no, Rav Chisa, that's exactly the Chiddush of the Mishnah. The Chiddush of the Mishnah is that you don't actually need that 30-day hair of growth. Ela la b'nizirut merubah. So, right, rather, it's not that the Mishnah is talking about a lengthy term of nizirut, meaning something that's longer than the 30 days. V'ketani matzil menamiyad. Right, what the Mishnah is saying is that it begins to count immediately, meaning after he's pure from his sarat, right? So they actually do count. The days of his sarat actually do seem to count towards his nazirut. So this doesn't seem to agree with what Rav Chisda was actually saying. Contradict what Rav Chisda is saying, because what Rav Chisda is saying is that they didn't teach this, right, in terms of a short term. They only taught it in terms of a long-term nazir. But what Rav Sharvia is basically saying is, it's like Rav Chisda, that doesn't make sense. Exactly. The point is that the Chiddush is that even for a short term, we could consider this to be okay. And so he resolves this on his own. Hu moti blav v'hu mefarik lav, right? He raised the objection and he answered it himself as follows. B'nizirut bat chamishim yom. So the Mishnah, right, has to be, if you want to explain according to Rav Chisda, it was a case of a 50-day term of nizirut. Diyati v'srin v'it yaldi v'it yalida bay, right? So sarat. So it's where the nazir did 20 days of his term, then he gets sarat. Megaleach sarato v'hadar yati v'tlatin yomin de nazir. And then he shaves his body for his saraz. And then what does he do, right? He like sort of interrupts his period. And then he does the 30 more days of his Nazir term, Dehai Legi Dulser, because then at the end of that 30 days, he has the 30 days of growth. So in other words, the 20 days that he did first, it counts towards the 50 days that he wanted to do. He just sort of interrupts himself with the Tzarat, but he still gets the 30 days at the end. And since he had 30 days, he's allowed to shave appropriately. And that's how he tries to explain what Rav Chisda is actually saying. Now, this gets challenged by Rami Bar Chama. This is going to continue on well onto the next page. They're going to go back and forth and try to actually understand how exactly can you count all this. We'll talk about this a little bit more tomorrow. But I think it's bringing up a whole different element with the Mishnah. In other words, it's fine that the Mishnah wants to say that you basically, it doesn't, you know, undo any amount of Nizirut that you kept before. But the question that the Mishnah doesn't seem to solve, that the Gemara wants to really deal with, is, okay, but hold on. One of the things we kept talking about all along is that you have to have 30 days of hair growth. But if you are purifying yourself from being a Mitzora, you're shaving midway through the process, how are you getting to the 90 days of hair growth? And so essentially what the Gemara is going to work out tomorrow is, you know, all these different things that the Mishnah has to mean basically a term where you still are going to get those 30 days of hair growth in.
So here's my question. Different people's hair grows at different rates, different speeds of growth. So you hear my question? Meaning 30 days growth on one person looks more or looks short, longer or shorter compared to the next person.
Yeah, but I don't think it has to do with what it looks like. I think it's just that it has to have been there.
Right, but how could they tell? Right, because it doesn't...
I don't think it's about telling. I think it's just about that the person knows that you didn't, that you let it grow for 30 days. I don't think it's about a look. I think it's just that it grew for 30 days. I agree with you. There are some people who look very disheveled if they don't cut their hair after 30 days, and other people who you wouldn't be able to tell at all. I mean, 30 days is not that long in terms of having hair grow.
Right, exactly. Unless you keep it very trim and your hair grows very fast, right? Like, certainly there are people where you would see it on them, and then 90 days, certainly. On the other hand, not everybody.
Right, not everyone. Right, so I agree with you. I think there is something interesting about the 30-day term, because it's not like when we think about like time between a haircut, 30 days is not a lot of time.
That is certainly true.
Well, that's our DAP discussion for the day. Rank us, review us on all major podcasts. Thank you to Rabbi Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadron website. Let us know what you thought about this DAP on our Talking Talmud Facebook page. And until tomorrow, go and learn.